Hey everybody, we're back. We're going to talk now a little bit about lithium, specifically batteries, etc. So we talked energy fundamentals. Now we're going to talk about lithium. This is kind of our second case study, if you will. We're going to have some assignments around this topic as well. Batteries, they're a big deal right now, whether it's cell phones, cars, etc. And so we're going to get into that a little bit. And let's start with this image here. This is a bar graph, right, which shows the number of cell phones sold worldwide in millions, starting way back in 2007 here. And I'm gonna remove my image for a second. So 2007 all the way up to 2021. So not quite to where we're at right now, but you can kind of get a general sense of what's happening. So this is worldwide, the numbers sold starting way back in 2007. Not many. We had a real steep increase, and interestingly, it's plateaued off a little bit since about 2016, suggesting maybe we have reached a sort of critical number to at least supply the world at the moment. We'll see if that changes. Had a little bit of a dip in 2020. Wonder what that was related to. We did have a global pandemic, if anybody recalls. But yeah, so it has been pretty flat though since about 2016, say. But regardless, every single year, right, we have a very large number of cell phones being sold. This is 1,535 million. Okay, so what does that mean? That's 1.5 billion, in other words. And that's happening 1.5 billion pretty much every year now for multiple years, likely to continue along this trend. So we have a great demand for all of the different minerals that go into cell phones, also the energy that goes to power them, of course. But yeah, we're going to be talking about the minerals in regards to cell phones. And one of the ones to pick out here, very popular, one that people are talking a lot about is lithium. So let's think a little bit more about this one for a moment. Continue on to an image that comes from the textbook. This is Kessler and Simon. So this is going to be in the reading, which is assigned this week. It's chapter 10.10, I believe. I hope that I got that right. From Kessler and Simon, you can see this image is in that chapter. It's actually, this might come from earlier in the chapter, but regardless, it does show a lithium trend here. You can see this kind of jagged curve here that goes up and ends up sometime after about the year 2000, really surpasses anything else that's at least shown on this chart in terms of changes in production since 1960. So, in other words, what minerals, what elements are seeing the biggest increase in demand, which is causing then a increase in supply and production rates. And lithium really tops out the list here, especially recently. Why is that? Well, it's batteries. Battery technology is taking advantage of lithium, and we're going to talk a little bit more about why that's the case. So let's continue on here. Lithium, what is it? Well, it is an element, right? It's shown as Li. Its atomic number is 3, so it's a very high on the periodic table. It is a metal. Its weight is around 7, so a little over twice that, right? You end up with some of the isotopes of lithium having an extra neutron, which gives it a weight that ends up being a little bit more than twice the atomic number, right? If you think about the atomic number, that's going to be the number of protons in the element. Oftentimes, you end up with a neutron that also is going to be associated with a proton. So you sort of double the number of protons because we have a neutron going with each. That gives you 6. Well, the atomic weight, average atomic weight, is 7. So that means there's an extra neutron in a lot of those, and that would be a different isotope of lithium, right? Lithium with isotope number of 7. Versus 6. So you have a mix of them out there. But anyway, lithium generally is soft. It's a soft metal. You can indent it with just a tool very easily, sort of scratch it and whatnot. It's also very light. It floats on water, interestingly. And yeah, many uses. We're going to be talking about batteries here. That's going to be one of the significant uses right now and moving into the future. It's also a drug, right? It's something that's been used for various psychological uses in the medical field, And that ends up being lithium carbonate, that's CO3, that would be the carbonate molecule. It's also used as a grease, okay, stearate, and I think I have a picture of that one as well. So this is lithium grease, okay? And ultimately, if you put some lithium into grease, so this would be a lubricant, right? It just makes it so that it is functional also at higher temperatures. It changes the properties of that grease and makes it really useful still, again, at higher temperatures. So lithium has a lot of different uses out there, right? Not the least of which are batteries. So this one is an image of a Tesla lithium-ion battery pack. Okay, so this would be literally in the car, and these things are crazy heavy. They're big, they're heavy, and they're powerful, right? So we have, let's see here, this particular cell. Okay, I got some stats on it. This would be an 85 kilowatt-hour battery pack. Okay, what does that mean? Well, that just gives you a sense of how much energy, right, is contained within that, which hopefully we understand a little bit about now from the last lecture. And that's 400 volts of DC voltage. Most batteries are going to be DC direct current. This particular battery pack here, which would go into a Tesla vehicle, okay, and all electric vehicles are going to be kind of going in a similar direction here, but this particular one has 6,831 individual lithium-ion cells. That's a lot of cells. It's a lot of battery cells, huge battery, and together it weighs about 900 pounds, okay? That's half of a ton, more or less. A ton's 2,000 pounds. Insane. So these things are heavy, right? They're heavy and they're big because we got tons of batteries in here. How do you extend the battery life of one of your batteries? Well, generally, you don't want to discharge it to too low of a value, and you also don't want to overcharge it. You got to keep it within this kind of window, this happy window, which is going to be somewhere between maybe 2% at the low end of charge up to 95% at the high end, okay? You don't want to be over 95% charged and under 2% charged. So somewhere in the middle there, that's going to extend your battery life. Trickle charging these things generally is going to result in a better charge. That just means that you charge it very slowly as opposed to, you know, using one of the charging superstations, which are useful because, hey, you get your battery charged very quickly. Trickle charging, so charging it very slowly with very low amperage is generally going to extend battery life, interestingly. You also don't want to charge these things when the temperature is below freezing. Okay, the temperature, ambient temperature, is going to impact actually what type of battery you're going to want to use in your vehicle or whatever. Some types of batteries work better in cold environments than others. You also want to avoid high discharge rates, ideally. Just as an example, though, in terms of battery technology, to give you a sense of where it's gone and where it may be going, is that after about 100,000 miles of driving, okay, we're going to talk about the Tesla Roadster, okay, which is a specific electric vehicle, it will have more energy storage available than cars that use nickel metal hydride cells. So that's a different type of battery cell. In this case, we have a lithium ion cell. There's also a nickel metal hydride cell, which is also a common type of rechargeable battery cell. Okay, so a Tesla Roadster, after 100,000 miles of driving, will have more energy storage in a lithium ion battery pack than the nickel metal hydride battery packs brand new. So it just gives you a sense of the energy capacity of lithium ion. Okay, lithium ion packs a lot of energy, and they also tend to hold on to that energy, again, depending on the environment and how they're being charged, et cetera, longer than many other types of batteries. So it's really a step change in terms of battery technology. This particular battery pack here, I said the whole thing weighs about 900 pounds. Well, how much of that is lithium itself? It's about 10 kilograms of this particular pack would be lithium, and that's about 22 pounds. Okay, so if you think about that, that's a pretty small percentage of the entire 900 pounds, okay, but it's still a significant amount of lithium. If you multiply this by however many vehicles are being produced, we're talking 22 pounds of lithium per vehicle, right? And that's using this particular battery technology. Okay, so where is the lithium coming from? Well, this is a map that shows both indium and lithium deposits. Indium is a rare earth. It's a very rare mineral that's out there. It's also a metal. We're not really going to focus on this at the moment, but this shows where lithium is as well. Okay, so you have two different types of lithium deposits. This comes from the textbook, from the reading. Two main types that are mined out there. One is a pegmatite. We're going to look at that in just a moment. And then the other would be brines or playas. And these may be something that you've seen images of. And that's kind of where mining is going, okay, into the future, is kind of focusing more on these brine deposits. So where are these located throughout the world? Well, they're all over the place. So you can see we're looking at squares and we're looking at X's. So you have, you know, Kings Mountain, which is here in the Carolinas. This is one of the most significant pegmatite lithium deposits in the world. It's been mined for quite a while. You have quite a few in South Africa here, or in the southern part of Africa, I should say. Quite a few in Central Asia as well. Brine deposits, where are those going to exist? Well, notice you have quite a few in the western United States, these X's. Quite a few down here in South America, okay? Also, quite a few here on, what is this, the Tibetan Plateau, West China. What is common about many of these places? Okay, Smackover is a little bit different. Fox Creek is a little bit different. But some of these major deposits, okay, what's common about these is that they're generally in arid environments, right? They're continental, so they're far away from, well, in this case, you're actually right next to the ocean. But many are continental, and all of them are going to be dry. Okay, so when we talk about a brine or a playa deposit, what are we talking about? We're talking about water, surface water, so that could be a lake, that has had a chance to evaporate, right? So when that lake water is evaporating, if you don't have a lot of fresh water coming into the lake, and you don't have an exit for that water, so it's internally drained, right? Evaporation ends up being the only place where that water can go, okay? And if it's arid, you're going to have a lot of evaporation. What does that do? That concentrates the dissolved solids in that water. So all water out there, ocean water, water that's coming out of your tap, has dissolved solids in it, has some sort of dissolved minerals, etc., that are in the water, okay? Even fresh water that we drink. The ocean, if you taste that water, it's salty, right? That's because there's dissolved sodium chloride in that water along with a lot of other stuff. In a lake that's evaporating in an arid environment, you have dissolved solids in there as well. And as that evaporation proceeds, those dissolved solids start concentrating more and more, because dissolved solids are not evaporating. They're not leaving the system. They're staying there. So as more water comes in, brings more dissolved solids in, the water evaporates, leaves the dissolved solids behind. They become more and more concentrated in that lake, and eventually it will become what's called a brine, okay? And a brine is ultimately just a very saline body of water, okay? It creates a brine, just super-duper salty. And salt, you know, can be sodium chloride. It's the stuff that you can eat, but you can have all sorts of different types of salts out there. You can have carbonate salts, anything that precipitates out as a crystal because it's becoming too concentrated to exist in solution anymore. That would be called an evaporite or a salt, okay? And so sodium chloride is the one that many people are going to be familiar with, but lithium salts also exist, okay? Lithium salts also exist. You're not going to want to eat those, right? You're not going to want to put them on your food, but those exist, and those are coming out as precipitates, as evaporite minerals, potentially becoming concentrated, right, in these evaporating lakes. So what's common? Well, in the Atacama down here in South America, that is a very dry area. You do have quite a few lakes that form brines over time. It could be a modern lake, a modern playa, right, that is evaporating, but it could also be an ancient one. You could have an ancient lake deposit that's since been buried underground. This is something you're going to see a video about here as part of this module, right? Looking at South America specifically, but these things can be buried, and then you can mine that buried brine, right? That buried lake deposit by sending water through it, which will then dissolve that lithium, and some of those evaporites will dissolve some of them, and then you bring those liquids back up to the surface, and then you re-evaporate that water, and so then you concentrate that lithium, and it comes out as a salt, and then that's what you mine. That's basically what's happening. But again, you're going to get more information on that from the video. It's a really good video. The Bloomberg video talks about that. And just fun fact about that, the person who narrates that video, I went to college with that individual as an undergrad. Very interesting. But anyway, so we have two main types, the pegmatites and the brines. Let's go ahead and look at... well, before we get to those specifically, look at the trade here, because we're kind of looking at this from a global, worldwide perspective. And as you're going to find with almost any mineral or energy resource out there, there are countries that are using these minerals have high demand for these minerals and other countries that are primarily supplying these minerals. It depends on where the resources are and where the demand is, right? And in many cases, the demand is going to be in places where the technology is being used. So in the United States, right, we have a lot of electric cars being produced. We have a lot of people using cell phones, et cetera. So you can note here that in terms of this export-import trade balance, okay, the amount that you're exporting subtracted by the amount that you're importing, okay? So in other words, if you're importing a lot, if you're importing more than you're exporting, okay, then you're going to be negative. If this number here is larger than this number, the import number is larger than your export number, your value is going to be negative. So that suggests the United States here, we are importing more lithium than we are exporting, right? So we have high demand for lithium. We do have some supply. You saw on the previous map, right? We have places that are producing lithium, okay? But they aren't producing enough to meet our demand. We still have to import it from elsewhere. So we are a net importer of lithium. Japan is, Germany, Belgium, South Korea, China. China's also producing, right? But, oh, wow, they have a high demand as well. They're making cell phones. They're making all sorts of stuff, just like the United States. On the other hand, look at these South American countries, right? Net exporters. So where is the lithium coming from that we're importing? Well, a lot of it is coming from Chile, Chile and Argentina, which, again, in this map, you can see this would be Chile here, this sort of thin strip, the far west side here, and then Argentina is kind of this larger country that also has some significant lithium ore that's being mined in the on the Andean Plateau, okay, which is where that is. So they are exporting, right? They're large producers, and a lot of that goes to these net importers, World Lithium Trade. It is a global trade, as many of these resources are. It's going to be a recurring theme. Okay, so where is it coming from? How is it mined? Let's get into the geology a little bit more. This is stuff I could talk about all day, but I'm going to keep it brief. So pegmatites, that was one of the things that we mentioned here, right? Early on. Somewhere back here. Yeah, there you go, in this map here. So we have lithium pegmatites, and then you have brine. So we're going to see, well, these pegmatites, like you see in the Carolinas, where are these things coming from? Well, a pegmatite is going to be something like this. So these large features, they're really beautiful, actually, these veins that run through this host rock, okay? That would be a pegmatite, okay? And it's not just any vein, okay? That vein has to be composed of a certain type of mineral. And oftentimes you're going to find these in very large granite bodies. Okay, granite is ultimately something like you find in the Sierra Nevada mountains. Okay, and there are a lot of pegmatites down there as well. The Sierra Nevada mountains are a granite body, and that's a magma that cooled in the subsurface. Okay, you have volcanoes where a magma comes out as a lava onto the surface, right? And then it cools, and you create this volcano like you see in Hawaii, or like you see in the Cascades in our backyard. We have these volcanoes like Mount St. Helens. Mount Hood is a volcano, right? And you could have lava coming out of that volcano, solidifying as a rock. Okay, that is an igneous rock. You also have magma that exists underneath the surface. It's close enough to the surface that it's slowly cooling. Okay, and some of that magma never makes it to the surface. It cools and turns into a rock in the subsurface, underground. Okay, and that would be oftentimes, at least in a volcanic chain, that would be magma that would turn into a granite. Okay, a granite rock like the Sierra Nevada. So that's magma that all cooled underneath the surface. And then later on, sometime later, there was some uplift that occurred and then erosion. And so it exposed it at the surface, right? And that's what we see today. The Sierra Nevada is a batholith, right? That's the fancy word for it. But it's a large granitic body of granite. Within that granite, you're going to have these pegmatitic veins that run through all over the place. And that's what these guys are. Okay, this isn't necessarily granite that we're seeing as a host rock here. But it is oftentimes occurring in granite. So the pegmatite itself is coming through as a vein. And pegmatites end up being really large crystals, generally, dominated by a mineral called feldspar, which is also very typical in a granite body. This is why they're oftentimes associated. But you have very large minerals. And why are the mineral crystals, why are they so large? Well, It's because often they have a very long time over which they cool, okay? The longer that a magma takes to cool, the larger the crystals are going to be, generally. So you think about a lava that comes out on the surface, okay, like in Hawaii, for example, that lava that comes on the surface, it is cooling very quickly, right? It's exposed to the atmosphere, which is relatively cold, so that lava is cooling very quickly. So the crystals don't have a chance to grow large. They end up being tiny, tiny little crystals that oftentimes you can't even see with your naked eye. You'd need to get a microscope out to look at that rock, a thin section of the rock, to even see the crystals. They're so small. On the other hand, if you cool that magma in the subsurface very slowly, okay, now the crystals can grow over a long period of time. And that's what's happening in these veins for the pegmatites. The crystals have a long time to cool, which means that they end up being very large crystals, really beautiful crystals. And again, the mineral is oftentimes feldspar. So yeah, this is the word. It's a pegmatite. It's kind of a cool word, a good Scrabble word if you want to impress your friends with a cool geologic term. And this would be an example of one of the minerals that you will find in there. It's like feldspar, right? This particular mineral is going to be called spodumene. All right, it looks very similar to many of the other feldspars that are going to exist within a pegmatite. And spodumene, what is this chemical formula? Well, we have it here. It is lithium. Hey, that's important, right? Lithium, aluminum, silicon, okay, SiO would be oxygen. So this right here, SiO, okay, that's going to be silica, and that's the very typical kind of molecule that you'll find in most rocks that exist in the crust, most rocks that exist on Earth, to be honest. Not all are silica-based, but most of them are, okay? So most of the rocks and minerals that you'll find are going to have SiO, silicon, and oxygen, and then some other stuff tacked onto it. Right, that's pretty much most minerals, which rocks are composed of minerals. We'll go into that in a future lecture. But so we have lithium, aluminum, silicon, and oxygen. So spodumene is what we're mining out of the pegmatite, and we are isolating this lithium. And the way they do that is they ultimately dissolve it. Okay, they use some really intense acids that will dissolve this mineral, this rock. It'll dissolve the rock so it goes into solution, and then you use a series of additional steps to then pull that lithium out of the solution slowly, okay, to separate it from the other stuff. Okay, so that's the pegmatite ore for lithium, right? The lithium ore coming from a pegmatite, I should say. It's a good way to put it. And then, but the other way to do it, which is, again, becoming much more popular, okay, this is now sort of where most lithium mining is going, where the increase in lithium mining is going to be from these brines, which I mentioned. Okay, so in this case, we have a location in an arid setting, right? Lots of evaporation can occur, and we have all these pools, really cool colors, actually. But all these pools of brine, okay, so this is water that's highly concentrated with salts, dissolved salts, okay, and as that water is evaporating, those salts can no longer stay in solution, and they start concentrating to the point where they start precipitating out into evaporites, right, into salts that are going to be solid crystals, right, and you can take those crystals out, and now you have your lithium or you have your other salts that you got to separate it from, and that's your ore. Okay, this water here, this brine, is in most cases being circulated up from the subsurface, right? Because the layer that has the lithium concentrate in it is going to be an ancient, oftentimes, an ancient playa layer, right? A lake deposit, ultimately, an evaporite lake deposit that you run groundwater through. You circulate that groundwater through it, and the groundwater dissolves some of that lithium out as it moves through, and then you bring that water back to the surface, put in these pools, evaporate the water back out, and you're left with your lithium that you just mobilized from the subsurface. So that's kind of generally how this is happening. And again, you're going to get more information about this in one of the videos you'll be watching. Okay, so that's kind of, you know, just a very quick and dirty summary of the geology regarding these deposits. There's a lot of other issues that come up and are very important to be thinking about in terms of lithium mining and lithium ore today, right? And that's where some of the other materials that I'm asking you to look at are going to be help you think about it a little better, or just help you understand. So there's a specific spot here, which you can see Thacker Pass. This is in Nevada. And this is a place where there's a proposed lithium mine. Again, the demand for lithium is going through the roof. The United States and many other countries are looking to fill that demand. There is money to be made, right? And people are arguing, hey, this is important because we're transitioning from fossil fuels in terms of gasoline-powered vehicles to electric vehicles. We need batteries in those vehicles. Hey, that is also a limited resource, right? And there's also an environmental impact and a cultural impact. Okay, we're talking about the cultural impact here, as well as the environmental impact of mining lithium. Okay, so that's something we also have to understand. There are pros and cons to all these things. And so there's a mine that was proposed at Thacker Pass. And it's a pretty contentious political issue. And I'm going to let you, again, watch a video on that as well as read a little bit about it. There's an article from The Guardian that I want you to read, and you'll have a chance to answer some questions regarding that. Okay? So let's go ahead and move on to some of the different types of batteries. So lithium batteries are not the only battery type that's out there. We also have, you can see, in terms of rechargeable battery sales by type, rechargeable battery technology is a moving target, right? It is technology, so it is always changing. Technology changes through time. And so what do we have here? Well, from 1994 to 2005, so this doesn't come up to really present day, but it at least shows you sort of the general trends of what's happening here. Early on, back in 1994, this is rechargeable batteries, nickel cadmium batteries really dominated the market, right? Almost 90% of the market. This is global. And then over time, you can see nickel metal hydride batteries started gaining some traction. I mentioned those in terms of car batteries. They're still used in some cars, okay? There's still a use for those, particularly if you're in places that are really cold. They may end up performing better. So there are still some applications where this makes sense over a lithium battery. But you can see also the lithium slice went from almost nothing back in 1994, and it's just been increasing since then. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger. That demand for lithium is increasing. You have a couple different types of lithium batteries. You have lithium ion, lithium polymer, which is this sort of green piece here. And we can talk a little bit about the differences there. Let's go ahead and just talk a little bit about how a battery generally works. So you can see this would be a dry cell shown here. In general, you have kind of two different sides to this. You have a positive and a negative side. You have negative electrode and a positive electrode. And you can see the positive one's in the center here and connects to the little nipple here on the top. Negative would be kind of on the outside, right? And then it's going to have a terminal on the bottom, which connects to that metal here. And then between the two, you have an electrolyte, okay? And this just facilitates the movement of electrons ultimately. And the electrolyte is really what we're focused on when we're thinking about what type of battery we're looking at. So electricity, you know, it's given you by the flow of electrons between these two terminals, right? The positive and negative. It is a redox reaction. Some atoms are gaining electrons, others are losing electrons. The electrolyte itself is what's enabling the flow, right, of those electrons. Some batteries are rechargeable, some are not. Okay, we're looking at rechargeable batteries in this case. And in the case of a rechargeable battery, all that's occurring is that when you are using the energy in this battery, the electrons are flowing in one direction. When you recharge it, you actually force the movement of electrons to go the opposite way, okay? And that's what recharging the battery is doing. Different lithium-ion batteries are often described by the type of electrolyte and the material used by the electrode, which is what I mentioned. Consumer goods usually use lithium polymer batteries, which is where a polymer gel is the electrolyte with a lithium cobalt oxide cathode. So the cathode is shown. I've already mentioned the cathode or the positive and negative terminals. Those are going to correlate with the cathode and the anode in this case. But regardless, in a lithium polymer battery, You have this polymer gel, which is acting as that electrolyte. Electric vehicles are typically going to be using lithium nickel manganese or lithium iron phosphate cathode material. So there's sort of a variety of different elements that go along with the lithium, but in most cases we are talking lithium. So, you know, I also just pulled in this piece of lithium ion versus lithium polymer. You know, both of them exist in different types of batteries. Even the nickel metal hydride batteries are going to have their own application and uses. And this just gives some pros and cons of each. So for lithium ion, you have a higher power density associated with it. No memory effect. Okay, so that can be important depending on what you're looking at. The cost is going to be a bit lower. And then there's some other things here. Lower chance of leaking electrolytes, right? That's a good thing. The negative side is they can combust, right? They can catch on fire. And that's something that has been in the news and is a real risk, something that needs to be understood. They can suffer from aging, costly to manufacture, et cetera. So there's pros and cons to each. That's kind of the main point that I wanted to sort of get across there. Let's look at batteries a little bit more here in terms of rechargeable single use, and then there's also the cell phones piece. So this is kind of an interesting graphic that talks about some of these different batteries and what their uses are, how they're being employed in the world. So nickel, right? Let's start with that here in terms of rechargeable batteries. Nickel cadmium, nickel metal hydride, we mentioned that, nickel zinc batteries, they're recycled into new products such as silverware, pots and pans, golf clubs, and new batteries. So that's cool. Okay, you have this recycling that's able to happen. Lithium ion rechargeable batteries are recycled into steel, stainless steel, and new batteries. Okay, recycling is key, right? That's something that I think is pretty common these days, and most people are on board, which I'm going to argue is a good thing. Okay, single-use batteries, alkaline, very typical, right? Oftentimes the used ones would be recycled into steel, new products. Road asphalt aggregate. We'll be talking about aggregate later in the class. It's really interesting. Ore that is used all over the world. Lithium-based primary batteries, they're recycled into new products also. Okay, same thing. I love it how we're making a lot of golf clubs, apparently, out of recycled batteries. And then refurbished, right? You can refurbish cell phones, etc. I'm going to be asking folks to be thinking about this whole side of things, the recycling, you know, reuse, etc., in the assignments that are coming up here pretty soon. And then recycled cell phones, unable to be refurbished, they can be wholly recycled and manufactured into new products like golf clubs. Hey. We need our golfers out there. But we also have pots and pans, anything that's stainless steel, et cetera, could be using lithium. It ends up being incorporated into many of these types of products. So I'm going to leave it there. This is something that you're going to be thinking more about, right? This whole life cycle of lithium, how it's used, the environmental implications, et cetera, in the assignment this week. And again, some videos to watch. So make sure you just work through the module one item at a time and you get it all done, every single one checked off. And I will be talking to you again later. Thank you very much.